Welcome to the deep dive. So, if you're coming from the world of classical machine learning, spending your days in Python writing scikit-learn
Oh,
pipelines,
yeah, tweaking those random forests.
exactly, or carefully tuning hyperparameters on a custom PyTorch model, the current landscape of AI probably feels like the ground is just entirely shifting under your feet.
It really does, because it used to be that the model itself was your absolute masterpiece.
Right, the exact architecture, the weights, that bespoke training loop, that was the product you built.
But today, we are unpacking a widely circulated AI engineer roadmap that argues a thesis that, well, completely flips that reality upside down.
Yeah, the premise is straightforward, but honestly very provocative. It says, the model is a commodity, what an AI engineer actually builds.
And if you were navigating this transition, especially if you're preparing for technical interviews right now in the era of foundation models, understanding this shift from model builder to systems builder is just non-negotiable.
Right, because it represents this massive fundamental reallocation of engineering effort.
Exactly. I mean, the biggest trap for someone with a classical ML background stepping into a modern AI engineering interview is defaulting to their strongest muscle.
Like saying, I'll gather a data set and train a bespoke model.
Yes, exactly. They're given a problem and immediately propose training something from scratch. But in the current industry context, that approach often completely ignores the time-to-value proposition that foundation models introduce.
Okay, I actually want to challenge that commodity label right out of the gate, though, because we need to define our terms here.
Sure, let's hear it.
When we think of a commodity, we usually think of interchangeable, standardized raw materials, like electricity, oil, wheat, right?
Right, totally interchangeable.
But if I'm a machine learning engineer working in, say, healthcare or finance, I am dealing with strict data privacy constraints, IPEA, SOC2.
You definitely can't just throw that data at a public API.
Exactly. I can't take my proprietary, highly sensitive data and send it to an open API endpoint. I have to pull an open source model, maybe a Llama or a Mistral, and perform bespoke fine-tuning locally.
That makes sense.
So if I'm doing custom fine-tuning on domain-specific data, that model is no longer an interchangeable raw material. I mean, it is highly specialized now.
Well, you are customizing the behavior, certainly, but you have to look at your starting point. You are downloading a pre-trained asset,
Sure point.
an asset that required tens of thousands of GPUs and millions of dollars to compute. You didn't design the transformer architecture from scratch, and you didn't pre-train it on a trillion tokens.
Okay, yeah, I see what you mean. So I'm taking an off-the-shelf engine block and basically just tuning it for a specific track.
Precisely. The overarching paradigm remains true. Your primary job is no longer designing the neural network architecture.
Even with local deployment.
Right. Even with local deployment and fine-tuning, the model is treated as a foundational component, a reasoning engine, rather than the entirety of the application.
Okay, so the interview failure isn't necessarily suggesting fine-tuning itself, but rather suggesting it as step one. Because in classical ML, training the model is step one.
Exactly. Here, the roadmap suggests fine-tuning is actually the last resort.
So if I'm in an interview, the expected progression should be to establish a baseline using a powerful off-the-shelf model via API first.
Yes, you validate the prompt engineering.
And then only if that fails to meet your latency, cost, or accuracy constraints, do you move toward few-shot examples or fine-tuning a smaller local model?
Because the interviewer is testing your understanding of capital allocation and engineering time, spending 3 weeks curating data and fine-tuning a model to solve a classification problem.
When a commodity foundation model could solve it zero shot in an afternoon.
Exactly. That would be a massive misallocation of resources. You treat the model as a swappable component.
So if a cheaper, faster model releases tomorrow, a well-architected system should just be able to swap out that API endpoint or local wait file with minimal friction.
Right. And that brings us to the core of the roadmap, what you are actually building.
If the model is just the engine block, the AI engineers is building the chassis, the transmission, the safety systems.
Yes, you are building the infrastructure around this non-deterministic engine to actually make it useful.
And I think the most critical piece of that infrastructure is context injection, right? Primarily through retrieval augmented generation, or RAG.
Absolutely. Our RAG is foundational.
But let's get past the basic definition of RAG. I mean, classical ML engineers understand the concept of vector databases and embeddings.
Oh, sure. They know the math.
Right. The real friction in production and what you actually get grilled on in an interview is the ingestion and chunking strategy.
Chunking is where naive RAG pipelines fail first. It always is.
Like if you just take a massive enterprise PDF, run basic OCR, and chunk it every 500 characters, you are going to destroy the semantic meaning.
You might split a critical financial clause right down the middle.
Exactly. So an interviewer will expect you to understand the trade-offs between different chunking algorithms.
Right. Character-level splitting with a sliding window overlap is sort of the baseline. Maybe you do 500 tokens with a 50-token overlap to ensure context isn't lost at the boundaries.
But the industry has largely moved towards semantic chunking now, hasn't it?
It has. You parse the document based on its logical structure. You know, headers, paragraphs, bullet points.
Which means your Python skills are heavily utilized in writing robust document parsers long before you ever hit an embedding model.
Long before.
But even with perfect semantic chunking, relying purely on dense vector embeddings for retrieval introduces a massive blind spot, doesn't it?
It does, because embeddings are mathematical representations of semantic meaning, so they are actually terrible at exact keyword matching.
Right. Like if a user queries your internal knowledge base for a very specific serial number, like AC492B.
The vector embedding might retrieve a document about a semantically similar part, but completely miss the exact serial number match.
Which requires building a hybrid search pipeline.
Exactly. You combine your dense vector search, which relies on cosine similarity, with a sparse vector search like BM25.
And BM25 excels at traditional keyword frequency matching.
Right. So the engineering challenge then becomes the routing and weighting mechanism. How do you normalize the scores from a dense vector space and a sparse vector space?
Just to determine the final ranking of chunks to inject into your prompt?
Exactly.
The standard approach there is reciprocal rank fusion, or RRF,
right? Yeah, RRF is very common. You take the ranked list from the vector search and the ranked list from the BM25 search.
And you calculate a combined score based on their inverse ranks.
But even then, we often see teams adding a cross-encoder as a final re-ranking step.
Oh, right. So you retrieve, say, the top 20 chunks using hybrid search, and then pass those chunks and the user's query through a cross-encoder model.
Yes, to get a highly accurate relevance score, whittling it down to just the top 5 chunks for the final prompt.
But wait, implementing that cross-encoder introduces a significant latency hit, doesn't it?
A huge latency hit. You are doing a full forward pass on a transformer model for every single chunk you retrieved.
Wow. So in an interview setting, discussing that specific trade-off is crucial. Weighing the increased accuracy of a cross-encoder against the increased latency and compute costs for the user.
It demonstrates that you are thinking like a systems engineer, not just a researcher trying to maximize an accuracy metric in a vacuum.
Right. And managing that entire pipeline ingestion, parsing, semantic chunking, dual database querying, RRF, cross-encoder re-ranking, and finally, prompt injection.
It requires incredibly complex state management.
This is where orchestration frameworks like LangChain or LambIndex enter the roadmap.
They do, but there's a catch.
Yeah, I've noticed a trend where senior engineers are actively moving away from these heavy frameworks in production.
Frameworks are excellent for prototyping, getting a proof of concept off the ground quickly. But they introduce abstraction layers that can really obscure what the system is actually doing under the hood.
Ah, so when you need to optimize a highly specific bottleneck in your retrieval latency,
or debug a weird edge case in how a prompt template is being formatted, untangling the internal logic of a massive open source framework can be a nightmare.
It can be harder than just writing the orchestration logic yourself in vanilla Python.
Exactly. An interviewer wants to see that you understand the underlying mechanics of orchestration, not just the syntax of a specific framework's API.
That makes total sense. Now, if we're relying heavily on these complex multi-step retrieval mechanisms to feed the foundation model, that introduces a massive amount of variability into the system's input.
It does. The pipeline is non-deterministic at the retrieval stage and non-deterministic at the generation stage.
Which brings us to arguably the hardest transition for a classical ML engineer, evaluation.
Oh, evaluation's a completely different beast now.
In traditional ML, evaluation is deterministic. You have a holdout test set, you run your predictions, you calculate the root mean square error or your S1 score, and you know exactly how the model performed.
You just cannot do that with open-ended text generation.
Right, because traditional NLP metrics like BLAU or Rouge are effectively useless for evaluating foundation models, aren't they?
Pretty much. They rely on n-gram overlap. So if the ground truth answer is the user must restart the server and your model outputs a reboot of the system is required,
A metric like BLEU will score that incredibly low because the specific words don't match.
Exactly, even though it is semantically perfect.
So you have to build an evaluation pipeline using LLM as a judge.
Yes. You are using a highly capable foundation model, usually something like a GPT-4 or Claude 3.5 Sonnet, to evaluate the outputs of your production pipeline based on a strict grading rubric.
The mechanics of setting up that rubric require a lot of precision, I'd imagine.
You don't just ask the judge model, hey, is this a good answer? You have to evaluate specific dimensions independently.
Like what?
Like faithfulness, which checks if the generated answer is derived exclusively from the retrieved chunks, penalizing any hallucinations.
Oh, got it. What else?
You evaluate for answer relevance, checking if the response actually addresses the user's original query.
So you build out a golden data set of maybe a few hundred highly complex edge case questions with ideal reference answers, and you automate the evaluation.
Right. That automation is essentially CI/CD, continuous integration, and continuous deployment, but for probabilistic AI.
That is wild to think about. So every time you tweak your sliding window overlap in the chunking algorithm, or swap your embedding model, or rewrite your system prompt, you run that golden data set through the entire pipeline.
And the judge model scores the new outputs against the baseline. If your faithfulness score drops from 95% to 88%, the build fails.
You are applying rigorous software engineering principles to a stochastic engine.
But critical detail to remember when discussing LLM as a judge in an interview is addressing the biases of the judge model itself.
Oh, right, because the judge is an LLM too. What kind of biases?
These models often suffer from position bias, where they favor the first answer they read in a prompt, or verbosity bias, where they assign higher scores to longer answers, regardless of actual accuracy.
So how do you mitigate that?
By swapping the order of answers in the prompt, or explicitly instructing the judge to penalize unnecessary verbosity. Mentioning that shows a deep practical understanding of the evaluation layer.
Getting the evaluation right ensures the system is accurate, but it doesn't ensure it is viable as a product. Let's pivot to cost and latency.
The intuition you build in classical ML regarding inference can completely betray you here.
Yeah, because running a vector through a decision tree or a traditional classifier takes microseconds and costs fractions of a cent.
Inference with a large language model is structurally different because of autoregressive generation. Every single token generated requires a full forwarder pass through the network.
So if your ARAG pipeline retrieves 5 massive documents and stuffs 10,000 tokens into the prompt for every single user query,
you are going to bankrupt the project on input token costs alone, let alone the generation costs.
So the engineering challenge is context optimization, maximizing the signal-to-noise ratio in the prompt. One of the most effective ways to drive down that cost and simultaneously solve latency issues is semantic caching, isn't it?
Semantic caching is huge.
Like, if you have an internal application and 50 employees ask essentially the same question about the new HR policy, you shouldn't be running that through the LLM 50 times.
You embed the user's query, check it against a vector database of previous queries, and if the cosine similarity hits a high threshold, say 98%, you bypass the orchestration layer entirely and just serve the cached response.
But semantic caching requires careful cache invalidation logic, right? Especially if the underlying documents change.
Yes, but it is a massive cost saver. And when you do have to generate a net new response, the primary metric you optimize for is time to first token, or TTFT.
Because of the autoregressive nature of the model, generating a 500-word response might take several seconds.
And in modern system architecture, you cannot leave the user staring at a loading spinner for 5 seconds.
Right, which requires building the infrastructure for asynchronous streaming. The AI engineer is responsible for catching the tokens as they are emitted from the API.
And streaming them over a WebSocket or server sent events to the front end so the user perceives the response as instantaneous.
It is a pure systems architecture problem. The weights of the model are irrelevant. What matters is managing the network latency and connection state.
The transition from a model-centric view to a system-centric view really culminates in the most complex area of the roadmap, agentic workflows.
Okay, let's get into agents. Because RA solves the model's lack of memory and context, but the model is still passive. It can only read and generate text.
Agents are designed to solve the model's inability to take action in the external world.
We hear the term agent thrown around loosely, but mechanically, it relies heavily on the React paradigm reasoning and acting.
Yes. You provide the foundation model with a system prompt that outlines a set of tools it has access to.
And these tools are just Python functions you've written, right? A function to query a SQL database, hit a weather API, or execute code in a sandboxed environment.
Exactly. But the model doesn't actually execute these tools. It acts as a reasoning router. The model evaluates the user's query and outputs its reasoning process.
Then it outputs an action, typically formatted as a JSON object, specifying the name of the tool it wants to use and the arguments to pass.
And the Python scaffolding you built catches that output, parses the JSON, executes the actual SQL query or API call, takes the raw result, and feeds it back into the model as an observation.
And then the model evaluates the observation and decides if it has enough information to answer the user or if it needs to call another tool.
The scaffolding around that React loop has to be incredibly resilient, and this is exactly where interviewers will dig deep.
Because a large language model is fundamentally a non-deterministic text generator. What happens when it outputs malformed JSON that your Python parser can't read?
Or what happens if the SQL query fails? What happens if the model gets stuck in an infinite loop, repeatedly calling the same broken API endpoint?
Yeah, if you walk into an interview and describe a happy path agent that perfectly executes every tool on the first try, you are demonstrating a lack of production experience.
You have to discuss the guardrails. You implement robust JSON parsers with error correction, or you use models specifically fine-tuned for tool calling that guarantees structured output.
You build in retry logic, where if a tool fails, you pass the error stack trace back to the LLM and ask it to correct its own arguments.
You also have to implement hard limits on the React loop. You cap the number of steps the agent can take to prevent infinite loops from burning through your token budget.
So again, you are building deterministic control structures around a probabilistic reasoning engine.
The complexity of state management in an agentic workflow is immense. You are managing the conversation history, the history of tool calls, the intermediate observations, and the system prompt.
All while ensuring you don't exceed the model's context window.
The value you provide as an engineer is entirely in that scaffolding. The model is just the processor. You are building the motherboard, the memory bus, and the peripheral controllers.
Which really brings us back to the overarching mission of this deep dive. The skills that made you an exceptional classical ML engineer, your deep understanding of data structures, your proficiency in Python, your analytical rigor and evaluation are all still highly relevant.
But the target has moved.
Right. You don't need to hand-roll a bespoke neural network to solve a business problem anymore. The models have become commoditized foundation layers.
The true identity of the modern AI engineer is defined by the complex, resilient systems built around those models.
It is mastering semantic chunking and hybrid retrieval pipelines.
It is building automated LLM as a judge, CI/CD systems.
It is optimizing for token costs and asynchronous streaming latency, and it's building fault-tolerant scaffolding for agentic workflows.
Adapting to this roadmap requires letting go of the instinct to build the core engine from scratch. The industry rewards those who can take that commoditized reasoning power and integrate it securely and efficiently into a broader software ecosystem.
Understanding that distinction is crucial for navigating your career trajectory and communicating your value in technical interviews. But I want to leave you with one final thought to explore on your own. We have established that the foundation models themselves are increasingly viewed as commodities, which shifts the engineering value to the complex infrastructure we build around them. The orchestration, the retrieval pipelines, the evaluation frameworks.
That's where the real building happens right now.
Exactly. But as the industry matures, we are already seeing managed services attempting to abstract away our RAG and agent hosting entirely. So if foundation models are commodities today, what happens when the scaffolding and orchestration layers also become commoditized? When the infrastructure itself is an off-the-shelf service, what will the AI engineer of the future build then?